You know how much I love my pillow, how much it's changed my life for the better. Well, I figured it was about time that I let you know about my pillow sheets. Now, Mike Lindell has a passion to help you get the best sleep of your life. That's why he has created the new Giza Dream Bed Sheets. Now, these sheets are made from the world's best cotton, Giza, that's only grown in a very small region where the Sahara Desert, Mediterranean Sea, and the Nile River all meet to create the ideal weather conditions for growing cotton. These Giza sheets are available in a variety of colors. They come with Mike's 10-year warranty, 60-day money-back guarantee. The first night you sleep on these sheets, it's heaven. You'll never want to sleep on anything else. Now, right now, you, my listeners, you're going to save 30% and get free shipping when you use the promo code Sean7, S-E-A-N 7, when you go to MyPillow.com. Again, that's promo code Sean7, S-E-A-N 7, at MyPillow.com. All right, glad you're with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. You know, it's sad. We're going to interview later in the program today. And I give the president a lot of credit for this. There's a guy, Eddie Gallagher, Navy SEAL, and he's going to be put on trial. And, you know, he's literally been put in prison. And, you know, the prosecutors are going after this guy because he murdered an unarmed, incapacitated teenage ISIS detainee receiving medical aid in the city of Mosul. You know, you got him. Then you got Christian Saucier, takes pictures of his submarine. Then you got Clint Lawrence. Clint Lawrence was given 30 years in jail. And because of Obama rules of engagement, this guy has to make a split second decision as the platoon leader for his men when two guys on a motorcycle start racing towards them, which, by the way, it happened a week and a half prior. And a week and a half prior, members of that platoon were killed by guys on motorcycles doing this. Then he makes the split-second decision. What does he get for it? 30 years in jail. I mean, we're going to send men and women out to fight for our country, and we're going to put handcuffs on them to begin with. Then we're going to try them if they make a split-second decision and they have to defend their troop, their platoon members, like in this particular case. It's unbelievable. The whole thing is, I mean, why would anybody want to sign up and fight for their country under these rules? Now, the president, to his credit, has, you know, with the belief of due process, presumption of innocence, is moving Eddie Gallagher to a less restrictive confinement while he awaits his day in court. He said the process should move quickly, but, you know, in the case of Clint Lawrence, he's been in jail for 6 freaking years. That's a long time to be in jail. Long time. And he's got 30 years. Great. Appreciate you serving your country. Sorry you made a mistake. Which, by the way, now we have new evidence that came up in this case, biometric evidence, forensic evidence, that actually showed the guys on the motorcycles that were approaching the platoon, in fact, had been responsible for, and again, we have fingerprints, we have evidence, we have DNA that prove that they were planting IEDs in the exact same area. Oh, so they really were jihadists, according to the evidence. That, of course, now how long does it take somebody to get a new trial? It's unbelievable. Anyway, 800-941-SEAN, you want to be a part of the program. All right, I want to go back, and I want to talk about this issue involving the lieutenant governor of Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia. Now, if you remember, we had the incident involving the House of Commons member. Remember the lady that was, what was a butterfly she's protecting? Kathy Tran or something? Right. She says, my bill would allow abortions even up to the point of labor when a woman's dilating. When a woman's dilating, that means the baby is coming any minute or hour now. That means it's time for birthday. It's going to be the kid's about to be born. Yeah, my bill would allow abortions even at that point. Like, what? And followed up by the idiot governor, you know, along with the Secretary of State, but the governor, you know, in blackface, who didn't get in trouble for that. But I can assure you, if it was a Republican, they would have. And that was, then the comments about abortion from you know, Governor Northam of Virginia, which
if
is...
If a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother.
He's himself is a doctor. He's a pediatrician. Then we have the case. So he says that. And then we got the lieutenant governor who they thought was going to replace Northam after these idiotic statements. And in the case of Northam, you know, what do we find out? That, oh, Northam can't be replaced because the lieutenant governor is being accused, oh, of rape in one instance and in another instance, serious sexual assault. Now, I've been asking the question, well, where are all the Me Too people? Where are all the I Believe people? Where are they all? Are they around anywhere? Because we don't hear word when it's a Democrat. The only reason you're hearing anything about creepy Uncle Joe Biden is because the people that are critical in that case, well, they're running against them as it relates to the 2020 nomination. So they want to hurt Biden. But the rest of the I believe people, they're nowhere to be found. So the woman that was raped, claiming rape, now we believe in due process. We believe in the presumption of innocence, but we also, you know, believe in it for everybody, and that goes for the lieutenant governor of Virginia. But remember what happened in the Kavanaugh case. In the Kavanaugh case, I believe. Okay. Well, in that particular case, everybody believed. And even the allegation that got so absurd, you know, with one woman claiming, well, almost every other weekend, these kids were spiking the punch for these young girls in high school. And after they spiked the punch, then the girls would pass out and then they'd line up in the hall and they'd take their turns gang raping these teenage girls. And it happened almost every other weekend. And then the story evolved into, well, I never really saw Kavanaugh spiking the punch. And he was near the punch bowl. Now, I never really saw him give a woman anything from the punch bowl, but he was holding a red Solo cup. Well, and by the way, two of the women recanted. Nobody seems to ever remember the recanting because that never gets the play that the allegations make. And then after that, well, he wasn't lined up in the halls, but he definitely was in the hall. And this was a frenzy to Bork or Clarence Thomas, Justice Kavanaugh. Well, okay, so now we have, let me play this woman who's making this allegation against the lieutenant governor of Virginia. Her name is Vanessa Tyson, and I want you to listen to her tell her story. Now, I'll give you a warning. It's hard to listen to. Other facts in this case, both accusers, one accusing rape, one accusing a violent sexual assault, both of them say they told people immediately thereafter, and those people have since corroborated those stories. But if you have kids in the car, you may want to just kind of be careful what they hear here.
We're kissing lying down, and we're kissing, like, so our heads are level with each other. Mm-hmm. And then it was like my neck didn't work.
What do you mean?
It was like I couldn't feel my neck. I couldn't hold my head up. He's using his hand on the back of my neck. And I still didn't know what was going wrong. I thought there was something wrong with my neck. And he's pushing down, and I couldn't hold my neck up. And I didn't know what was going on. I honestly didn't know what was going on. And then the next thing I know, like, my head is, like, literally in his crotch. And I'm choking and gagging. And, you know, I couldn't say anything because I'm choking and gagging. And so, you know, it continues for, and he's holding my head, so I can't lift, like I'm trying to lift my head, but I can't.
Is he saying anything to you, Vanessa? Nothing.
There's nothing.
And what are you thinking at this moment?
To be honest, I'm in total shock. Like,
do you say anything to him? No.
I didn't know what to say.
I mean, it's so shocking and so unbelievable. And you know what? I believe in due process. Remember I said it about Michael Avenatti, who, by the way, has since been brought up on these other charges involving, I guess, extortion with Nike. And shockingly, what would Mark Geragos be doing with Avenatti? I never understood that. I actually liked Geragos over the years. We never agreed, but I mean, he's not a dumb lawyer. He's a smart guy. So I don't know what his involvement is or isn't in this particular case. But I said when the allegations came out, there were three separate investigations into Avenatti as it related to his, I guess, girlfriend at the time or whatever, of some type of violence. Those three investigations ended up, all of them, exonerating him. So you got to believe in due process. You got to believe in the presumption of innocence. And I'll do that here in the case of the lieutenant governor. But that's pretty compelling testimony. These are pretty compelling stories. And here's where the problem is. Well, we're consistent and we're saying due process. The silence among the I believers has been deafening. Did they not see the interview? Are they just ignoring the interview? When did this happen? Yesterday with, I guess, Gayle King on the CBS Morning Show. You know, she does great interviews. I think she does really good interviews. And so this takes place. And I don't hear a word from any of them. Now, I've got a montage of the I believers. You know, this is what they were saying back then.
Not only do women like Dr. Ford, who bravely comes forward, need to be heard, but they need to be believed. They need to be believed. I just want to say to the men of this country, just shut up and step up. Do the right thing.
Let me just say right at the outset, I believe Dr. Ford. I believe the survivor here.
I believe her. I stand with her. And
do you hope
I
she shows up on Monday? Do you hope that she testifies?
I don't think she should be bullied into this scenario.
I believe her.
I believe Professor Ford. I think she's credible.
I believe. Well, does anybody believe Vanessa Tyson, who was on the CBS Morning Show with Gayle King? Now, what I did think about the Republicans during that time with Professor Ford and all these allegations, you know, I actually said for the first time the Republicans actually got it right. They showed the proper seriousness of the issue and conducted themselves properly. And, you know, and it got to a point until Lindsey Graham stepped in and that changed the entire narrative debate. And I think one of the best speeches I ever heard in the Senate chamber came from Susan Collins of Maine, who looked at all of the facts in the case. I mean, it was a testament to somebody that just wanted the truth. That's all. Nothing else. And I've been critical of her in the past, and I understand Maine is, she has to represent her constituents in Maine. She does so very well. That was an incredible moment. But the fact that they've been so silent, why does this guy not get the same treatment? Now, I know we're talking about creepy Uncle Joe and crazy Uncle Joe Biden. I mean, it is creepy.
Crazy, creepy Uncle Joe.
I mean, it really is. And I don't get it. I've had this experience at different times of my people that get in your personal space. I love Scott Shannon. Creepy, crazy Uncle Joe. Is
Uncle
on.
Joe Biden, the close stalker.
I just love Scott. He's amazing. You know, he's got the number one morning show in New York City. Number one. And he has for forever. Number one morning show. His ex-wife, boy, I bet they're regretting that decision, letting him go for 2 seconds.
His work ex-wife.
That's what I mean. He's married to Trish forever, who's a wonderful, and his daughter's wonderful too. Very successful. Hey, if you're one of 34 million Americans that smokes, you know what a hassle it can be. For me, I'm out playing golf and I come back smelling like cigars. It's the smell on your hands and your breath, your clothes. But now, thanks to Juul, you don't have to worry about it anymore. Juul is a vaporizer. It does contain nicotine for a satisfying transition. Now, when I found Juul, it was a complete game changer in my life. I don't smoke any cigars any longer, and Juul was designed by smokers for smokers to be an alternative to whatever it is you're smoking. So if you're one of 34 million adults who do smoke, cigars, cigarettes, pipe, whatever, well, there is an alternative to all of them. Now, to discover the smoking alternative that's like nothing you've ever tried, just visit JUUL.com/SwitchAmerica. That's JUUL.com/SwitchAmerica. Now, warning, this product does contain nicotine, and nicotine is addictive. I just don't think it's unfair to say, where are these people? You know, this really irks me and really bothers me because it's so transparently political. Everything they do is transparently political. You know, liberals are generous, but only with your money. You know, Nancy Pelosi, we go to her district and she lives in the million-plus-dollar enclave of the gated community where all the other rich people in San Francisco live. In her district, though, are, oh, streets, tons of homeless people, tons of drug addicts. We showed the pictures and images. Feces in the street, all over the place.
When you have needles and blood-stained clothing in the streets, that can't be safe for anyone.
I do see, like, a lot of needles and then, you know, feces everywhere. And then that's obviously about drugs and stuff like that.
Kind of makes it a drab when you walk around, you see needles and close to a playground and just feces everywhere. I mean, the smell of it all, it's kind of...
You definitely have to look on the ground when you're walking. And it's definitely an uptick because I've lived in this city more than 30 years and this is probably the worst I've seen it.
Why doesn't Nancy Pelosi walk around her neighborhood, get pledges for money, build a shelter for homeless people that feeds them, allows them a nice place to shower, and maybe even a place to sleep, and maybe as part of that, maybe they can hire a couple of drug counselors and do it on her own with all her rich friends? She's a multi-millionaire. No, but she'll only be generous with your money. You know, Democrats care about building a wall, but only if Obama's president in his second term. Now Trump wants to do, forget it. The all-important Dreamers, DACA, no. That all gets cast aside because that would mean actually talking to Donald Trump and making a deal. You know, oh, well, what about the furloughed employees? They don't care about them either. It's the same. If it's Kavanaugh or Trump and it's Me Too against a Republican, boy, they're all on board. Got a significant allegation of rape and violent assault against a woman. Not a peep out of most of these same people. That's so despicable.
When he came back in the room, he sort of stood blocking. The door was sort of imposing the way he walked in the room. And he shut the door, and it was sort of like simultaneous. I heard the door click and the light went off.
Click, like locking the door.
Mm-hmm.
And you think what?
Oh, no. What's about to happen?
Mm-hmm. You became concerned?
Mm-hmm. He did things that you shouldn't do to someone mm-hmm. without their permission.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried several times to get up mm-hmm. and leave and was pushed back down.
And what happened?
He forcibly sexually assaulted and raped me. I was not on the bed initially. There was a couch, and he pulled me over, and I tried several times to get up and was pushed back down, mm-hmm. held down.
Mm-hmm. And you made it clear, this is not what I want.
It was very clear.
Because, you know, he is saying this night was consensual.
If you have to hold someone down, it's not consensual.
All right, that was Meredith Watson. That's the other accuser. Forcibly sexually assaulted. Said she was raped in 2000. Lieutenant Governor. You know, I honestly, I know we've been so busy with so many other issues. And I've been watching. And it came up in my mind last night. All right, we're doing creepy. It's so creepy. Crazy Uncle Joe.
Crazy, creepy Uncle Joe.
You know, I don't even know what to say about it. I mean, you know how many people were writing me last night? Like, oh, stop showing those pictures. Well, I got to tell you something. There are many we weren't able to show. Like with young kids grabbing their face and kissing them on the lips. I'm like, I don't get that.
Where's the parents?
Well, you say it on mic. So
I did say it on mic.
I don't
Where's
know.
Where's the parents?
I don't know. I mean, I have met touchy in your face people my whole life. There's some of them that they don't give you any personal space. Like all of a sudden, they want to talk and they're right up in your grill. And I'm immediately uncomfortable, naturally. And so even if you take a step back, they just move a step in closer. I move three steps back. I start doing a dance moving back so fast, and they can't stop.
But and
by the way,
people,
and almost 90% of the time, they have bad breath.
I was just going to say, why are they so unaware of their breath?
Why are they so unaware of their invasion of someone's personal space? How do you not respect somebody's personal space? I don't get it. Now, and then you got the other side of this, which is, you know, he like takes people by the neck and pulls them in, and they're like kissing on the lips, and then he doesn't know these people. Or rubbing the shoulders thing. Stop. Get your hands off me. Am I the only one that feels that way?
Did you see the picture of his wife?
Oh, yeah, that's on Drudge right now.
It's hysterical.
Yeah,
they say they're just
affectionate. Is that Bezos?
That's Jeff Bezos.
Very affectionate
group of people. They just like to, you know, inappropriately touch one another.
All right, so as we're talking about this, though, and I'll let people make up their own minds on this whole thing, but, you know, and then you think of the crazy Uncle Joe side, and, man, you got the first African-American, he's articulate, and clean. Man, that's storybook. Like, what is wrong with you? You know, I can't believe he got away with that and then became the vice president. And, you know, you can't work at a Dunkin' Donuts or a 7-Eleven unless you have
You cannot go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent. It's a fully... I'm not joking.
You got the first sort of...
Listen to this.
Mainstream
first.
American
who
is articulate and bright and clean and a nice-looking guy. Mm. I mean, that's a storybook.
Romney wants to let he said in the first 100 days, he's going to let the big banks once again write their own rules. Unchain Wall Street. They're going to put you all back in chains.
And you don't know my state. My state was a slave state. My state is a border state. My state is the eighth largest black population in the country. My state is anything from a Northeast liberal state.
Okay, my state's a slave state? And I know he projects this Amtrak image of his, but we're learning a lot more from Peter Schweitzer.
Wait, can I just say a funny story? So I was taking Amtrak because I take it every day, but I was taking it, and there was a huge, giant picture of Joe Biden, ginormous picture.
Amtrak Joe. Is that what they're trying to convince
Uncle
you?
Uncle Joe Biden, the close stalker.
I don't think I'm alone in this. Let's take a survey of our... Jason, do you like people getting in your grill like that, or you've had people that try to, you know, kiss you on the lips and you're like moving your face a million different...
Preferably not, although I, unlike you, am not averse to having a massage, okay?
So a stranger walks up behind you and starts, you know, massaging your soldiers.
Not that kind of massage, man.
No. All right, well, man, that's what crazy, creepy Uncle Joe does.
No, that I wouldn't stand for that.
Kylie, where do you stand on this?
I think it's so creepy. I don't want anybody touching me.
Exactly.
Not at all.
Ethan?
I'm in the same boat as you. Even the massage is freaky to me. Like, no, don't touch me.
All right, Blair, jump in here. You know, where are you on all of this?
Bring your hands to home.
Bring your hands home? What about or in your grill? I mean, And 90%, I don't know, I always carry mints with me. Always carry mints, you know.
I say if you had a Tic Tac, go for the shoulders. Get close. Get in for the real thing.
Back up, you creep.
That's right. Now, if you didn't have a Tic Tac, I'm with Hillary. Back it up.
But here's the thing. Do you agree? You've experienced this yourself, right? I don't know.
Without the Tic Tac, it's a nightmare.
What about somebody just, you know, trying to kiss you on the lips? You don't know this person or are very unfamiliar with this person.
I know some people I know and their colleagues, and they just come over and they're like, hey, how you doing? Mwah.
On your lips.
Mwah.
And you have no problem with that.
No, I have a big problem with it. But what are you supposed to do?
What are you supposed to do? I don't know.
Because, it comes from a place of, like, a lot of people.
Adrian.
Listen. I love Rocky. If Rocky wants to kiss me on the lips, by all means, Rocky.
Wow. I'm going to call Sylvester Stallone's brother.
Oh, please do.
All right. Or has any guy ever come up behind you and start giving you a neck or back massage?
Yes.
Ah.
The worst is when the hands are sweaty.
Oh, so creepy.
Sorry, that's real.
But this is why people said, why are you calling?
I was in a real massage where they had to call the police.
What, were they going for a happy ending? What was that?
When I got over on my back, my masseuse was naked.
What?
I turned around and I said, hey, where's where are your clothes?
That was your response. Hey.
I was so surprised. And he goes, I swear to God, he goes, oh, this is a new type of massage that we're offering here. And I said, I'm pretty sure that this is not new, and I'm pretty sure I don't want any part of it. And yeah. I got up and I got out of the room, and they had to call the police. He was taken away.
That's really creepy, freaky. Yeah,
I agree with that. Right here in Midtown.
All right, you know what? I don't need strangers touching me. I just don't. Leave me alone. Leave me alone.
I don't want any part of you touching any part of me.
No, every night I have to run this stupid wire down the back of my neck. There is a process that everybody must follow.
I've actually witnessed that.
All right, so I put my earpiece in. I put it over my ear myself. I throw it over my back. They are to pull it back and then click it in. Perfect. Then I will pull down the earpiece to the exact level of tension so it won't show on TV. Then they put a piece of tape over it. Then I put my jacket on. That's it. Simple. Because other times...
Okay, first of all, that is a complete misrepresentation of what actually happens.
No, that's
you fidget like a little kid waiting in a dentist chair.
I don't want to talk
about
it.
You're a nightmare.
I got a better story. Alec Baldwin is being sued. Baldwin was on with Howard Stern the other day, and apparently they were talking about me. Why is Howard Stern... You know, taking this idiot's side. I don't get it.
He's not taking his side.
He took Jimmy Kimmel's side in about...
And he's actually, not taking their side.
Howard Stern actually said, and this guy's brilliant. He's smart. And I couldn't believe he said, well, why would Kimmel ever be in a fight with Hannity? I mean, he's on network. And Hannity probably is dying to be on network. I'm like, Howard, you know
Howard,
better than everybody.
Howard is dying for you to say, you know what? I want to clear the air. I want to come on your show, Stern. I want to talk
Howard doesn't
this.
Want to talk to me.
Oh, Sean.
No,
seriously?
He does. No, listen, I don't have no interest. Why? Do you want me to say, you know, what am I going to have to answer the questions? Do you pleasure yourself? Do you this? Do you that? Like, I don't feel like going there. Who cares?
Didn't say what you felt like doing.
What he would never understand is his book, Private Parts, although I do a very different kind of radio than he does, and I think he's smart and entertaining and fun, and, you know, I listen to him on Sirius XM, especially during Christmas. I get to hear all the highlight interviews from the year because I don't listen to radio much at any other part of the year. And I've interviewed him and he on my radio and TV show, and it was fun. I mean, he's a fun, smart guy. But when he said that Kimmel, Hannity's probably dying to be on a network, I'm like, Howard, where you been? We get 2-3 times the ratings of this idiot. And I'm like, you should know that.
Sean.
What?
It's called just stirring things up, creating a little tension.
Yeah, probably.
Getting your attention.
And hug me. They'll put their hand in me and go, thank you. To put their hand over their mouth like they're going to cry and go, thank
right,
you for
now,
what you're doing with the
So
Trump.
He has Alec Baldwin on, and I forget what everyone was telling me, and I just didn't feel like listening to it. Anyway.
Whoa.
I'm going to call for this. Alec Baldwin is being sued and compared to President Trump by the man that allegedly hit during that parking dispute late last year in New York City. Apparently he had to go off to some anger management classes in New York and allegedly went off on a man who parked in a spot. One of the actors... family members was holding him, and Baldwin is holding for him, and Baldwin has since appeared in court where he pled guilty to second-degree harassment, forced to undergo anger management. Yeah, we remember the tapes with his daughter. I remember being in a Twitter fight with Alec Baldwin. His daughter actually, well, this is when I was on Twitter, which I'm not anymore because we were compromised, apparently, in Twitter. Anyway, his daughter wrote me directly, please stop fighting with my dad. I said, okay. I stopped. I'm like, well, why don't you ask your dad? I mean, she seemed like a nice kid. I don't want to bring kids into this. I just leave him alone. So anyway, long story short, now he's being sued and he slams. Now, Baldwin has a horrific temper. Cameraman fights in people's faces with cameras all up, paparazzi. All I have to say is hello and walk by. Leave the guy, you know, I don't know why he's being so hostile. And then one day he's trying to fill in radio. Me and Mark Levin tag team him. He got so angry he walked off the show. He was hosting. Brian Whitman was assisting in the hosting. Yeah, well, we have that, but we're not going to do that now. But then, so he still wants to do talk radio. So he goes to our affiliate in Philly, PHT. I mean, that was at our ex-wife in New York radio station, WABC. We're now on the all-new AM 710 WOR. Anyway, so what's funny about it is he's practicing being, he really was doing a talk show. This is part of, this is, we, none of this is fake. This is Alec Baldwin auditioning to be a talk radio host in Philly.
When we come back, we got some time. Oh, great. We're going to, when can we take some calls, Ivan?
Whenever we want.
Do we have calls that are on there now?
No calls yet.
What number do people call to get on the air, Ivan? Do we have that number?
It's right there.
Oh, do I have the call number in front of me? Oh, I'm so sorry. That's interesting. Interesting. At 1210 at PHT. Of course, any other questions you have, any other comments you have, call us to the... what else? Call us, please, at 215-1210. Now, if you don't call, we're going to keep reading from the Scientology manual. You might not feel it. You might not feel the energy right now. You might not feel the swell of what's happening here. Do we have any calls yet there, Ivan? No calls. Let's read some more about Scientology. Is Sean Hannity a Scientologist? Alec Baldwin posing the big questions tonight here. Do we have any calls here yet, Ivan? None. Boy, it's just incredible. Unbelievable. Well, you leave us no choice, listeners.
And then he ended up calling his mother because nobody would call his show. It was so amazing. That was the best tape I ever heard. This is when he was trying out in New York on WABC, walked off the show, walked out.
Sean Hannity?
Is that Brian Whitman?
Hi, Sean.
Alec, I wanted to give you an official WABC welcome, considering you were supposed to come on my program last week, and you didn't show up. What happened?
No, I wasn't supposed to come on your program,
no,
Sean Hannity.
You were supposed to come on the program, because a deal was made with your agent that if you were going to come on with Brian, first you'd come on with me.
I wouldn't dream of coming on your program, Sean Hannity. I'm here with Brian. I'm here with a really talented...
You are. You don't tell the truth.
I'm here with a really talented broadcaster. Why would I want to come on the show with a no-talent former construction worker hack like you?
Are you the guy that said that?
All right, stop right there. He apparently said the same thing. I'm really proud that I did all that work in construction for all those years.
Clearly, he doesn't like hard work.
I'm proud that I was washing dishes at 12 and did every job in a restaurant for 10 years. It's the roots of my who I am. I'm proud of all that.
He's got a much harder job reading lines off a teleprompter.
So it ends like this. Levin calls in right after, and can you move it forward a little bit because we're running out of time?
We can't actually move it forward, but we'll play it on the other side of this break just for fun.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We will come back. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. All right, here's the clip I was talking about with Baldwin.
Are you 40 or 50 pounds overweight now?
Come on now. Who is the...
Oh, that's the Bloviator.
You're 40 or 50 pounds overweight. I just told you, you got a two-digit IQ.
And who's your little cabin boy there? Cabin boy. You are Sean Hannity's cabin boy. What?
Can I get you, Alec, to... You have nothing to say to him.
Well, can I talk to Alec Ballas or no?
We're going to end
this
right now.
Why is your wife so pissed off at you anyway?
It's my patriotic duty to get this story out there. If I didn't speak out loud, probably, you know, no one would have ever understood that Stefan Halper was an informant trying to spy on the Trump campaign. He brought me to London to meet with him. And the same day that I met with Stefan Halper, where he was part of an operation against me, the British Ministry of Foreign Affairs invited me to basically speak to me as well. So when I explained that the British and the Australians were working hand in hand with the Obama administration to spy on members of the Trump campaign, you'll see in my book, at the height of the FISA abuse scandal around the summer of 2016 and the fall of 2016, the British government was actively seeking me out to question me and to spy on me. People tell me, what months was this happening? And I said it all happened around the time that Stefan Halper reached out. It's so important that the statement that President Trump made a couple days ago on the Hannity show regarding declassifying materials is so important, and it's going to shock so many people, because what's going to be revealed in that declassification is going to show that no one with the Trump campaign was in a conspiracy or conspiring with the Russians, but we were essentially all targeted by what we thought were allies of the United States.
Yeah.
And you know, a couple months ago, when President Trump was openly discussing declassifying materials, there were two U.S. allies that called him and said, please do not declassify anything. And no one knew who those allies were until a little later, and we figured out it was both the U.K. and Australia. So they're involved. They were spying. They were actively trying to undermine the campaign by, you know, bringing people like Alexander Downer and Stefan Halper to interact with the campaign. And I think that's what the declassified materials are going to show. And obviously, my congressional testimony that's now public, it's quite clear that people like Congressman Mark Meadows and others who are privy to these materials also understand that that's what's in that declassified, that classified material.
And that there will be counter-investigations, you know, sort of accounting for this hoax that exonerated him. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. To investigate perhaps you, perhaps others. Do you fear that? Do you think that's coming down the pike?
I don't fear it personally. I fear it as a citizen, right? Investigate what? Investigate that investigations were conducted, and what would be the crime you'd be investigating? So it's a terrible cycle to start. He's already started it with calling for the locking up of his political opponents, including people like me. And so it would just be more of that dangerous step. And I would hope, although they continue to disappoint me, the Republicans would finally stand up and say, we don't do that kind of thing. But me personally, ask me questions. Go ahead. I'd like to answer them in the daylight if I could.
It's amazing, by the way, that James Comey cut. Same guy that said he could be fired for any reason or no reason at all. Now saying maybe it was because Trump was obstructing. And he doesn't understand at all the Mueller report. George Papadopoulos tapped into something really, really important here. And when he started going off and explaining, and yes, the president did say on my TV show last week that a lot of this information, the FISA warrant applications, the Gang of Eight information, the 302 information, and other information is going to come cascading down on Democrats. We have the new dump by Congressman Doug Collins today as it relates to the FBI guy, Bill, what's his name, Priebus, and his what the things, Priestep, the things that he said. Anyway, George Papadopoulos, sorry, that's a horrible thing to say, and his wife, Simona, are with us. Deep state target, how I got caught in the crosshairs of the plot to bring down President Trump. By the way, it's up on Hannity.com, Amazon.com, bookstores everywhere. How are you guys? Good to talk to you again. Thanks for coming back.
Oh, thanks so much for having us, Sean. It's a real honor.
Thank you so much, Sean. Thanks again for being there with you.
Let me ask you this. When you're saying that this classified material, because my sources have been telling me a long time that because our intelligence community actually has laws and rules they've got to follow, sometimes they kind of farm out to other intelligence agencies work that maybe they themselves cannot do, which would hence result in resistance of even allies like Great Britain and Australia, great allies of the U.S., from wanting that information out because it would show maybe they were doing things at the request of our intelligence community that they shouldn't be asking them to do, George?
Sean, that's exactly what happened. And there's only one person on this planet that was interacting with both the British and the Australians to the point, and I want to make it clear, that the British government, when Donald Trump was elected president, ended up sending me the letter of congratulations from Theresa May for me to pass along to Donald Trump. And I ended up passing it along to Steve Bannon. I'm sure Steve Bannon passed it along to President Trump at the time. So I was the one in these meetings with the Australians and the British. You know, I don't think anybody else in the campaign, except a couple others, were dealing with people like Stefan Halper. But I saw with my own eyes, and I was so suspicious of these meetings I was having, you know, which, you know, you, as a foreign policy person, you're supposed to be meeting with U.S. allies, but you don't expect them to be spying on you and trying to sabotage you and the campaign you're working with simultaneously. So this guy, Alexander Downer, we could get into him in a little bit, but I just want to make it clear that his behavior was so disturbing. And this is the Australian diplomat that I foolishly reported him
to Bob Mueller and the FBI because I thought that he was spying on me and I thought he was trying to undermine me in the campaign. So even before that New York Times story came out about drinking or whatever that nonsense was, I reported this guy to the FBI. So there's a lot more to the story regarding U.S. allies and them and the Obama administration farming out, you know, surveillance tactics to them that I'm here that I really want to clarify.
I want you to go a little deeper. When you say that, look, I got to be honest. When it comes to our intelligence community, we need them so desperately, which is why we give them these powerful tools to protect us. I have no problem with them spying on all of our enemies and, if need be, even our allies. But it's when the powerful tools of intelligence then get used against and turned on the American people, which I believe happened here. That's a problem. And if they're farming out that aspect of intelligence gathering, not to protect us, but for political reasons, I have the big problem with that. That's why I call it an abuse of power. Can you expand on that?
Absolutely. Look, here's where it gets even more disturbing. I'm a man who, to this day, okay, has never met a Russian official in my entire life, let alone on the Trump campaign and transition, okay? So,
by the way, you know, people have said, well, that your wonderful wife, Simona, who, you know, I've gotten to know both of you so well, they always thought she was from Russia. She's not.
Exactly. I was still this morning on Russia Today, and I made the point that that there is nothing Russian about me, and you know, this is the proof how much they fabricate everything, up to the point that he married a Russian Italian woman.
So you grew up in Italy.
Yes, I'm Italian. I grew up in the south of Italy, you know, I've. Part of my family is in Switzerland, which is nothing to do with Russia, by the way. So I'm full Italian. People question my accent, my look. I always says I don't know how my accent sounds, but definitely no Russian national ever told me.
No, I think it's hilarious.
It is crazy. And, you know, it resulted also in a death threat for me. Many people over these months telling me, you have to die, you're a Russian agent, get out of the United States.
Oof.
I mean, there are many bad aspects of this fake propaganda. You know, people, haters using this against me all the time in a very violent way. So in the beginning, it was a joke. But honestly, it's not. And I blame also my country. Why nobody came out saying she's Italian?
Well, listen, I feel for you. I really do. And I think it's very hard when, you know, both of you have gone through all that you've gone through. And, you know, George, as I've gotten to know you and Simona, I just realized that you are a victim in all of this. And the title of your book is absolutely correct. You know, you were a target and you end up spending 12 days in jail. Thank God it went quickly and it wasn't terrible. But I find that a lot of innocent people in this now have been targeted at a very high level. And what part of this deep, you know, I know some people did not understand what I meant early on by the deep state when I was talking about the deep state. But why don't you say in your words what the deep state is, what you experienced?
Absolutely. And this is the perfect platform to do that. So I'm going to go step by step here because it's very important for people to understand how in depth the deep state went to go after me and others on the campaign. There's this person named Joseph Mifsud, who is the professor who was at the epicenter of the fake Russia collusion story that got everyone involved in it for the last 3 years. This was a man who told me in London, out of the blue, that the Russians possessed thousands of Hillary Clinton's emails, okay? And then later on, Bob Mueller told the world that this was a Russian asset and a Russian intermediary offering to sabotage Clinton, okay? That was the fake story that Bob Mueller and the FBI and the intelligence agencies propagated to the world in order to make people like myself, the campaign, and President Trump look bad. Now, here's the reality, and this is just so the listeners understand how incredible the PSYOP was that was used by the intelligence community, probably in tandem with the media, to get that fake story out. The reality is, this person, Joseph Mifsud, who told me that the Russians have emails, was introduced to me
by a woman named Arvinder Sambe, who was the FBI's legal attaché in London. And this woman also has a personal working relationship with Bob Mueller dating back to 9/11. So I meet him after she encourages me to meet with this person in Rome at a place named Link Campus. David Ignatius of the Washington Post has written an incredible article about this place. Link Campus is a spy training school for the CIA and the FBI. So I hope you're getting my drift here. So the guy who tells me that the Russians have thousands of Hillary Clinton's emails is introduced to me by an FBI intermediary, and all of his contacts publicly and privately are to Western intelligence organizations, including the CIA, the FBI, and the British government. So this person tells me this information. And then a week after he tells me this information, I have Alexander Downer, the Australian diplomat, spying on me to see if I would make any off-the-cuff remark regarding what he had told me. And that's what I think Congressman Mark Meadows was referencing a couple weeks ago when he stated that ambassadors were conspiring with the FBI and Western intelligence groups to hurt Donald Trump in the campaign. So this is the entire story. The entire Russia collusion narrative and the foundation of it not only was corrupt, but it was completely fabricated and pre-planned by the Obama administration. And that's why I have been so vocal in, and trying to get the story out there, because I think the president and his administration really needs to talk to the Australians, the British, and even the Italians and find out what their exact role was in creating this, fake op that was targeted at not only myself, but others in the campaign.
See, I got to take a break here. We'll come back and we'll continue. George Papadopoulos, his wife Simona with us. Deep state target, how I got caught in the crosshairs of the plot to bring down President Trump. I've heard this from numerous sources that these countries are scared to death at what the president may declassify. Amazon.com, Hannity.com, bookstores everywhere. It is a fascinating read. All right, as we continue, George Papadopoulos, his wife Simona with us, their best-selling book, Deep State Target, How I Got Caught in the Crosshairs of the Plot to Bring Down President Trump. What is it? I've been reading a lot of what you've been saying in your interviews, and you really feel, both of you, that this is your patriotic duty to actually expose how the Obama administration, everyone seems to forget, it was the Obama administration, and this happened under their watch. Most people seem to forget that, George.
Look, and if they do forget it, that's exactly why I'm screaming from the rooftops, trying to remind everyone that exactly what you just stated, that the Obama administration was the ringleader behind that entire operation to try and bring candidate and President Trump down.
Yeah. And Simona, you're going through all of this with him. Is he telling you some of these thoughts at different times that he thinks this doesn't feel right? You know, be it the London professor or Downer or Stefan Halper or any of these people?
Well, I could witness personally one of these characters, which is Professor Mifsud. I used to work for in London. And I witnessed it many times, both with the FBI, the Congress, the Senate, and also to the media, that this man has ties to Western intelligence, is likely to be an Italian asset. So seeing this mischaracterization of the entire investigation, and George in the center of that, because he met this allegedly Russian spy that I know for sure not being a Russian spy, I felt it was my duty to the truth and my loyalty to my man to put the truth out.
All right. If you guys can hang on just a couple more minutes longer, I know we're going to let you go. We put it up on our website, Deep State Target, How I Got Caught in the Crosshairs of the Plot to Bring Down President Trump. George Papadopoulos, his wife Simona, also play the rest of that Alec Baldwin Hannity Levin tape. They're all begging me. I'll get to it. All right, 25 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. And thanks for staying over. We continue a little bit longer here with George Papadopoulos, his wife Simona. I know you're asking me to play more of the Alec Baldwin Hannity Levin tape, so we'll get to that in a minute. Now, because Alec is getting sued. Anyway, their book is really important. It's called Deep State Target, How He Got Caught in the Crosshairs of the Plot to Bring Down President Trump. And I want to get to this point, which I think is very key. And I want to make the usual, well, I want to delineate between rank and file, FBI field agents and special agents and people that literally, you know, put their lives on the line and protect us every single day. That's the 99%. And unfortunately, we're talking about a few abusing power at the highest levels. But you really believe it was the FBI setup. Now, I want to just give a little foundation here. We know from the testimony that came out that all of these top FBI individuals, we know that all of them were made aware of the fact that this dossier was tainted, that this dossier was not verified, that this dossier was Hillary Clinton bought and paid for, but then they ended up using it and James Comey signing the first one in October of 2016 and then telling Trump in January of 2017 as president-elect at Trump Tower that, well, I have no idea, it's not verified, but it's salacious. So he lied once or the other, and I know this guy, he doesn't really understand his need to remain silent at this point. But anyway, and the Democrats now demanding that Attorney General Barr testify about the Mueller report. Now, interesting, you know, Gerald Nadler was opposed to the release of the Starr report. Not that that would matter, anything type of consistency. Bill Priestap, this is news and information from Doug Collins today, a senior member of the FBI's counterintelligence team. He was worried about Strzok and Page having been compromised by a foreign adversary because of their affair. And anyway, we learned that and more thanks to Doug Collins. There's going to be a lot more information cascading down. They want to bring everybody back. By the way, if they call you back to testify again, will you go?
Sean, so I've been invited to testify in front of the Senate Intel Committee later this month, and I plan on going. And, you know, I think it's going to be a very interesting testimony because it's post-Mueller report. Obviously, the world knows now that I had nothing to do with Russia, neither did anyone on the Trump campaign or even the president himself. But you know what's the most interesting thing back to your...
Well, let me ask you a question. If you're going to testify under oath and you say one thing that is inconsistent with maybe previous testimony, you do know that they get to decide whether you committed perjury, lied to Congress, even though it could be the most innocent thing ever. I don't know. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, that, you know, it's part of that. But, you know, I want to make sure that the truth is out there. And also, I really want to make it clear, because this is probably the most disturbing part of my story and probably part of the 2016 campaign. What my actual case was really all about was Bob Mueller and Jim Comey actually spying on me for my ties to Israel. This is like new information that I've just been releasing now, and it came out in my congressional testimony. But they were going to hit me with a FARA charge. I think I was going to be the first person in history to be charged with working as an unregistered agent of the State of Israel. And that, I just want to make it clear, that's the extent that these people wanted to go to nail me and to make me basically lie to them, to do everything in their power to undermine Trump with my case. Of course, I never lied. I didn't undermine President Trump. I landed in jail for 12 days for it, but I wouldn't change a thing. And it goes to the same
thing.
But
why would you allow yourself? I'm very serious here. You've already given your testimony.
Yeah.
You know, why would you allow yourself to go under oath and knowing that they are the ones that would decide? Now, we're going to have criminal referrals from Devin Nunes this week. Why would you put yourself in a position where if you're under oath, I wouldn't testify without immunity in your case, and I would insist on it. And if you don't get it, don't do it.
It looks like that's what my lawyers are asking for. I have a great new legal team, and that's what they're asking for. And quite frankly, I agree with you. And if I don't get it, we're probably not going to do it. But I was currently...
Well, let me check with Simona here, because she went to visit you all 12 days when you were in jail. Simona, whose side are you on, mine or his?
I'm on your side.
Thank
I don't
you.
Do that again.
No, you can't do it. And let me tell you, you've already testified to everybody. How many hours did you testify total between, you know, Mueller and everybody else?
Probably about 30 hours. You know what? I'm going on the record. I'm not going to testify to the Senate. That's it. I'm going to make sure that my lawyers take care of that. But you're absolutely right. At this point, I've testified for over 30 hours. My testimony to Congress, to the Oversight Committee, has been released. That's the story, and that you're absolutely right. At this point, there could be trouble. So,
I start to feel scared now because I testified to Congress and Senate already. So.
No, let me tell you something, and they let them hold you in contempt. You've given 30 hours of testimony. And I would call Professor Alan Dershowitz because he gave some case history last night on my TV show about how it was either the McCarthy hearings or the Watergate. I don't remember which one he was referring to, that there comes a point where this is harassment. All these people being brought back to testify and ask the same questions over and over again. Yeah. A, it becomes a perjury trap if you misremember something. And B, you know, these people can't afford these attorneys. It's so expensive.
Totally true.
All right.
And Simona's a lawyer, and, you know, she's been advising me very well, and she agrees with what you just stated. So
I think
we're all on the same page.
No, and I would recommend anyone else that testifies. I'm pleading the fifth.
And Sean, they arrested me, too. I've been there twice already, and they keep wanting me to say the same thing over and over about me, but they never release my chances.
And if you ever say it differently the second time, boy, they get to decide, criminal referral, here we go. And then then more years of your life is ruined because of these idiots. All right, last question. Yeah. How was the FBI, as you've been saying, meaning the upper echelon, How is this a setup by them?
This was a setup by the upper echelons of the FBI because based on the simple fact that the man at the center of the entire Russia fake conspiracy, the professor who told me in London that the Russians had thousands of Hillary Clinton's emails, this guy was introduced to me by an FBI legal attaché in the UK named Arvinder Sambe, who had a direct relationship to Mueller after 9/11. And I have just found out recently that the same lady who introduced me to this person who created this chaotic situation we found ourselves in the last 3 years, she also was introducing the equivalent of the Deputy Attorney General of the UK to Bruce Orr at that infamous dinner of the Orrs 4 days before the Trump Tower setup meeting that also we later found out was orchestrated. So this entire thing was a pre-planned, orchestrated event. No one on the Trump campaign was even meeting with Russians, let alone conspiring with Russians. But it was assets of the FBI and people that were led and directed from the FBI to make contact with various members of the Trump campaign were doing it for the sole reason to make it seem that people were working with Russia when we had nothing to do with it. So somebody was taking orders, and those orders came from the top of the FBI under Obama. That's what I mean by that.
We're going to get to the bottom of it. We're going to hold them all accountable, and you're helping us. George Papadopoulos, Simona, thank you. Deep State Target, how I got caught in the crosshairs of the plot to bring down President Trump. And it's on Hannity.com, Amazon.com, bookstores everywhere. Guys, thank you so much for being with us, and we wish you both the very, very best of luck. And listen, don't trust any of these people. I don't trust any of them. These members of Congress are on a witch hunt that they'll never stop.
That's a great point, Sean, and thanks so much for having us. You've been a tremendous friend and a great person, and I'm glad you're on our side. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Sean.
Telling your story, both of you, and I wish you, as time goes on, that you move on from this, have a great life as you deserve. All right, let's go back. Everyone is, are you busy in there? Oh, I'm sorry. You distracting my producer? All right, so everyone is writing me, play more of the Alec Baldwin stuff. All right, here's what we're going to play. Play a little bit, I guess, came up. Play cut 20, where Alec Baldwin is attacking me and Levin on Stern Show. Play that.
Sean Hannity, who lacks self-awareness on any level, he's got zero self-awareness.
Zero.
Have you ever had a discussion with him? Have you?
No. Why would I waste my time doing that? And that Mark, what's his name? Levin?
Mark Levin.
Oh, is it Levin? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know.
Say.
You know.
Mark Levin.
You know
Mark
how that
Levin.
Goes.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he's very smart.
Right.
Levin is an idiot. Hannity is an idiot. These guys have no talent. They've got no talent.
And it's troublesome.
They're horrible.
They're horrible
broadcasters. Levin is a black belt idiot. The things he says are just not interesting.
Horrible broadcasters. Well, now, just to remind you, now, this is the first time Alec Baldwin wanted to be a radio talk show host. At the time, we had a program director at my former station in New York, proud of my new station, WOR. I still have friends over there, a lot of friends. And anyway, and Levin included. Anyway, so the deal was that he was going to come on my radio show. And then we were going to let him try out on a Sunday night. And Brian Whitman, who's a broadcaster, used to be on our New York station, but is now in Los Angeles doing really, really well. Very funny guy. We don't agree politically, but I love him a lot. He's a great guy. Anyway, he was sort of like helping Alec, first time hosting. And anyway, I called in. I'll just play a little bit of that part again.
Sean Hannity?
Is that Brian Whitman?
Hi, Sean.
Alec, I wanted to give you an official WABC welcome, considering you were supposed to come on my program last week, and you didn't show up. What happened?
No, I wasn't supposed to come on your program,
no,
Sean Hannity.
You were supposed to come on the program, because a deal was made with your agent that if you were going to come on with Brian, first you'd come on with me.
I wouldn't dream of coming on your program, Sean Hannity. I'm here with Brian. I'm here with a really talented...
You are. You don't tell the truth.
I'm here with a really talented broadcaster. Why would I want to come on the show with a no-talent former construction worker hack like you.
And he goes on attacking what I did for a living, which I'm proud of. Anyway, Mark Levin calls in. It's one big happy family. And, well, let's just say Alec, who was guest hosting, decided to leave the studio after this.
Are you 40 or 50 pounds overweight now?
Come on now. Who is
the... Oh, that's the bloviator.
You're 40 or 50 pounds overweight. I just told you, you got a two-digit IQ.
And who's that? Who's your little cabin boy there with you?
Not a cabin boy.
You are Sean Hannity's cabin boy.
You have nothing to say to him.
Well, can I talk to Alec Ballas or no?
We're going to end this right now.
Why is your wife so pissed off at you anyway?
No, please don't leave. I beg of you.
I'll take my headphones off. You go ahead.
Take your headphones off. I beg of you not to leave.
I'm off the air now, folks. Thank you very much.
No, stay right there.
We're going to be back with the...
stay right there.
With the No Talent and
Cabin Boy
Show.
No, come on now. Come on.
You are a No Talent, ignorant fool from Long Island. You should go back to building houses out in Hempstead.
I'm a talk show host begging for a job. Good luck.
Okay, listen, Sean.
All right, Sean's hanging up.
I'll hang up, too. He's a Mr. Tough guy.
Come back. Come back. Alec, come back. They're gone. Alec? Alec has walked out of the studio. Alec, please come back. He is in the other room. Alec Baldwin has put on his jacket, and he has left. I just went into the station lobby to the elevator bank to see if I could find Alec Baldwin and ask him to please return to the radio show, but he is gone.
He left. He walked out. So he wasn't done trying out for talk radio. Then he went to Philly, and this is him on radio. By the way, he's saying, oh, these guys are horrible. Okay, listen to the you're right, Alec. I can't duplicate this. This is the best radio I've ever heard in my life. This is Alec Baldwin hosting.
We have some time. Oh, great. We're going to – when can we take some calls, Ivan?
Whenever we want.
Do we have calls that are on there now?
No calls yet.
What number do people call to get on the air? I mean, do we have that number?
It's right there.
Do I have the call number in front of me? Oh, I'm so sorry. That's interesting. Interesting. At 1210 at PHT. Of course, any other questions you have, any other comments you have, call us to the... what else? Call us, please, at 215-1210. Now, if you don't call, we're going to keep reading from the Scientology manual. You might not feel it. You might not feel the energy right now. You might not feel the swell of what's happening here. Do we have any calls yet there, Ivan? No calls. Let's read some more about Scientology. Is Sean Hannity a Scientologist? Alec Baldwin posing the big questions tonight here. Do we have any calls here yet, Ivan? None. Boy, it's just incredible. Unbelievable. Well, you leave us no choice, listeners.
That was real. He got no calls and had to call his mother. It's the greatest tape in talk radio history. I could play him calling his, 14, 15-year-old daughter a rude, thoughtless little pig. But you know what? You know what my problem is? I'm not mean enough to do it anymore. I just don't have the heart to do it to the kid. Anyway, that's him. Talk show host of the year, Alec. Oh, who's failed TV on? He was on MSNBC. That show tanked. His show on NBC, I guess it was, tanked. ABC. What was the show called? Does anybody remember it? Who knows? Nobody lasted like 3 weeks and nobody would watch it. I mean, it had lower numbers than even fake news CNN. You know, this guy's now he's being sued and he has to go to anger management classes. He's nuts.
No exception. There was a very contentious committee hearing yesterday when Fairfax County Delegate Kathy Tran made her case for lifting restrictions on third trimester abortions, as well as other restrictions now in place. And she was pressed by a Republican delegate about whether her bill would permit an abortion, even as a woman is essentially dilating, ready to give birth. And she answered that it would permit an abortion at that stage of labor. Do you support her measure and explain her answer?
Yeah, and I'm, you know, I wasn't there, Julie, and I certainly can't speak for Delegate Tran, but I will tell you first thing I would say, this is why decisions such as this should be made by providers, physicians, and the mothers and fathers that are involved. There are, you know, when we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. So I think this was really blown out of proportion. But again, we want the government not to be involved in these types of decisions. We want the decision to be made by the mothers and their providers. And this is why, Julie, that legislators, most of whom are men, by the way, shouldn't be telling a woman what she should and shouldn't be doing with her body.
And do you think multiple physicians should have to weigh in, as is currently required? She's trying to lift that requirement.
Well, I think it's always good to get a second opinion and for at least two providers to be involved in that decision, because these decisions shouldn't be taken lightly. And, mm-hmm. and so, you know, I would certainly support more than one provider.
Right now, women are able to access an abortion in the later stages of pregnancy under certain conditions with the approval of medical doctors. I've done nothing to change that.
How late in the third trimester could a physician perform an abortion if he indicated it would impair the mental health of the woman?
Or physical health.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm talking about the mental health.
So, I mean, through the third trimester. The third trimester goes all the way up to 40 weeks.
Okay, but to the end of the third trimester.
Yep, I don't think we have a limit in the bill.
So, where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she is about to give birth, would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman would
I understand
make at that.
I'm asking
point.
If your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that, yes.
Last year, House of Delegates member Kathy Tran proposed a late third term trimester abortion bill. You've heard the whole flack over it. Basically, you can terminate the child as they're coming through the birth canal. In fact, your successor, Governor Northam, said even after it's born, it would be up to the parents, resuscitate it, make it comfortable, and then maybe terminate it, execute it, whatever the word is. That created a firestorm. If you were governor, would you have vetoed that bill if it hit your desk?
The bill is, I believe it was, you know, Virginia law currently requires, you know, that before a woman can end a third trimester pregnancy, she must get three separate doctors to evaluate the pregnancy and really certify that it's necessary. You know, this was a common sense bill that, in the sense, you go from 3-1 to help people in rural communities. It very rarely, as I say, twice in 19 years, but unfortunately it became political.
Governor, would you have vetoed the bill, yes or no?
I would not have vetoed that bill.
I would not have vetoed that bill. Now, we got to go back. We just heard this woman who introduced the bill. By the way, on the same day she introduced the bill to protect these butterflies that aren't called butterflies, whatever they were called, Kathy Tran, House of Commons. Remember, she was asked specifically, oh, what about during the dilation process? In other words, that is the birthing process. The canker worm, which she first, you know, she introduces it the same friggin' day. Protect the worm that becomes some type of offshoot of a butterfly. And then she said, well, yeah, I would, what if a woman's in labor? What if she's dilating? Yeah, I'd support abortion under those conditions. Yes, this bill would allow that. And then Governor Northam, well, I could tell you exactly what we're going to do. We're going to, well, first we'll deliver the baby and make sure the baby's comfortable. So compassionate. And then the mother will decide whether or not we resuscitate the baby or give the baby, you know, medical care or not. And then we'll have a discussion with the doctor after. And then all these states and, you know, it's unbelievable. And it resulted in us having an abortion survivor on this program who's living a happy, productive life. I don't know why Democrats have latched on to this. Imagine if somebody wanted to do this to a kitten being born or a puppy being born. Think of Animal Rights Act. Where are they in all of this? Well, anyway, that was Terry McAuliffe's answer. He's thinking about getting into this 2020 race. House Minority Whip Steve Scalise is here. He's filing a discharge petition on the Born Alive Protection Act. And if he gets enough signatures today, it will force an anti-infanticide vote on the House floor. Good. Let's put all these people on record. You know, you can't let evil continue like this. These are fully formed babies. This is not about abortion, even. If you allow infanticide. Anyway, House Republican Whip Steve Scalise is with us. How are you?
Hey, doing well, Sean. Great to be back with you. And thank you for highlighting just how barbaric this process is, the procedure of murdering a baby when it's born alive, and what we're doing to stop it.
Okay, so you need, though, I assume you're going to get every Republican, right?
Yeah, we just started collecting signatures. We've already exceeded 125 signatures. There was a line literally out the door of the House chamber today during the 130 vote series, and we're still collecting signatures, and my goal is to be well over 150 by the end of today and to get every Republican to sign, and then to start getting some Democrats to sign, and frankly, Sean, to engage people all around the country who, when I talk to people about it, it's not a question of whether or not to support it. People are shocked, Sean, that it's legal in America to murder a baby after it's been born alive outside the womb. It literally transcends the abortion debate because they're pro-choice people that think it's wrong to kill the baby after it's born alive, and yet there are no legal protections. Some states have protections, but clearly, as you saw in New York, in Virginia, in other states, they're allowing it to happen or moving to try to legalize it. We need to stand up and say, you know, all innocent life is precious, but those most vulnerable are the ones that need the protections the most, and this Born Alive bill, it's Ann Wagner's bill from Missouri, but my discharge petition that I signed today would go around Pelosi, who refuses to let us have a vote. It literally would bypass Pelosi and force a debate and vote on the House floor.
All right. So you need 21 Democrats. Have you gotten any yet?
I have talked to a few Democrats who are supportive of what the legislation does. There's a lot of pressure by Pelosi to try to hold everybody off. I think we will get some Democrats to sign this discharge petition. And look, once you see that happening, Sean, I think there's going to be a groundswell, a grassroots movement all across the country of people that are going to just ask the simple question, not whether or not my member of Congress will sign, but why hasn't my member of Congress signed? And look at my website, RepublicanWhip.gov. When you go to RepublicanWhip.gov, we're going to have a list, and you can click on the list and see who signed the discharge petition, see if your member of Congress is there, and if they're not there, pick up the phone and call and say, not what are you or not you going to get on, but you have to sign this bill. If you dare say you're pro-life, you have to sign the discharge petition to bring this bill to the floor.
Unbelievable. Let me ask you a question as we move on for this. I really want you to be successful in everything here. I want to ask, and I guess this goes to the heart of what the Republican Party is going to stand for. Why is there resistance among some Republicans to go forward with the president taking on health care again? Why is there some resistance, you know, among Republicans as it relates to the emergency order, which, by the way, is supported legislatively? What, I think it's 10 U.S.C. 284, if my mind serves me right, my memory serves me right. And also constitutionally, the president has the job as commander in chief. And I think there's been enough homicides. I think there's been enough, you know, sexual assault cases, violent assault cases by illegal immigrant criminals that would show that it is, in fact, a real crisis, as even Obama's DHS secretary, Jay Johnson, said. You know, why is there resistance for some Republicans just stand up, take a stand and fight? I don't get it.
Well, Shauna, and we know that there are members in other places on this. I strongly support what President Trump is doing to build the wall, to even go to the step of declaring a national emergency, because it is. I mean, it's a serious crisis at the border. I've seen the problems. I've talked to Secretary of Homeland Security Nielsen about the problem. And we were able, even with Pelosi, we were able to get $4.5 billion of new wall funding, but there's still more that needs to be done, and that's why the National Emergency Declaration is so important. And then let's shift to health care, Sean, because, you know, you brought up this, you know, this lawsuit that's out there. Let's keep in mind, it wasn't Donald Trump, but Nancy Pelosi who wrote Obamacare. It was Nancy Pelosi who famously said, you have to pass the bill to find out what's in it. And if Nancy Pelosi's bill that they rammed through Congress that nobody read, if Nancy Pelosi's bill is ruled unconstitutional, which many of us, by the way, predicted it would be back then when we voted against it, then it's not Donald Trump's fault that she wrote an unconstitutional law. But frankly, not only is it unconstitutional, it doesn't work. It's hurting families with pre-existing conditions who have to pay double-digit increases in their premiums, who in some cases are paying $10,000 deductibles. Let's focus on protecting people with pre-existing conditions and lowering premiums by letting you decide what's best for you and your family. Pick the plan that's best for your family and buy it from wherever you want to buy it, whatever state you want to buy it from. That's how healthcare should work. And right now, that's not what we have under Obamacare. And so, again, Nancy Pelosi is the one who rammed the bill through Congress, knowing that there were serious legal problems with it. She wasn't concerned about that when she passed it. She should be asked that question.
All right. Congressman, thanks for what you're doing. Keep us up to speed. And if we need to put up a few Democrats that are in pro-life districts, remind their constituents, we'll be glad to help you in any way we can.
And a lot of them ran saying they'd be pro-life, Sean. We're going to hold them accountable for
yeah,
this.
Send us over a list of those. Send me a list of that.
We'll send you the link. We will definitely send you the link. Let's go defend the lives of babies who were born alive.
All right. Thank you, Congressman. Right, as we continue, Don, we're going to get to your calls at the bottom of this half hour. I'm loving this fight, as I mentioned earlier, between Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or AOC. You know, that's what I guess her fans call her, because she's at AOC on Twitter. Anyway, so she's in a battle with Liz Cheney over the 22nd Amendment to the Constitution. And it's interesting because they're going after each other, and Liz Cheney took issue with Ocasio-Cortez's statement during a, you know, conspiracy tinfoil hat town hall on MSNBC, in which the freshman congresswoman talked about Democrats being in control of Congress in the 30s and 40s, when our party was the boldest, the time of the New Deal, the Great Society, the Civil Rights Act, and so on. No, that was in the 60s, but we'll get to that in a minute. We had and carried supermajorities in the House, the Senate. We carried the presidency. They had to amend the Constitution of the United States to make sure that Franklin Delano Roosevelt did not get reelected, she continued. Liz Cheney writes, well, we knew the Democrats let dead people vote. According to at AOC, they can run for president, too. According to AOC, Congress amended the Constitution to prevent FDR from being elected. Well, the problem is FDR died in office in 1945. The 22nd Amendment was in 1947. Whoopsie daisy. And in response, Cheney tweeted, well, you know what I just said about, well, now that dead people can run for president. She writes back, hey, Representative Cheney, I see from your dead people comment that you get your news from Facebook memes. But the National Constitution Center and Newsweek are just two of many places where you can clarify your misunderstanding of the history of the 22nd Amendment, she wrote. And, well, according to that, discussion of the 22nd Amendment and term limits began in 1944 after presidential candidate Thomas Dewey warned a 16-year term of Roosevelt was a threat to democracy, so on and so forth. Cheney, well, she actually has a J.D. law degree from the University of Chicago Law School, 1996. Hey, AOC, I know you're busy, so I thought this short would be helpful to introduce you to the basics of the Constitution. If you're trying to figure out how the bill becomes law, they have a great video of that, too, which is hilarious. And she writes back, AOC does, you know, she has nothing to say because she's wrong, as usual. All right, your calls coming up straight ahead as we continue the Sean Hannity Show. Awesome Hannity tonight. Tell you about that coming up. 9 Eastern, Fox News. Glad you're with us.
Hi, my name is Anna Lawrence. This is my husband, Tracy Lawrence, and we're the proud parents of Lieutenant Clint Lawrence, who is currently serving a 20-year sentence at Fort Leavenworth Prison. President Obama, I would like to ask you, please, 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 give my son a full pardon and send my boy home. President Obama, to date, you have shown mercy and granted presidential pardons and commutations to over 600 Americans who made poor choices and ended up in prison. With all due respect, sir, my son didn't make a poor choice. The only choice that he made was to serve his country. Mr. President, you've acknowledged that those who that you have helped have taken full responsibility for their actions, and they deserve a second chance. Our son, too, deserves that second chance. Mr. President, if I could speak to your heart for a moment, parent to parent, I would like to tell you a little bit about who my son is. My son is a very, very outstanding young man that loves his country and willingly and proudly chose to serve his country.
What you just heard there was the mother of Clint Lawrence. This was a video she put out pleading with then President Barack Obama about the case of her son. We have covered this many, many, many times on this program. Now, the president did something very interesting this week as it relates to Navy SEAL Eddie Gallagher. And he said, in honor of his past service to our country, Navy SEAL Eddie Gallagher will soon be moved to less restrictive confinement while he awaits his day in court. Process should move quickly. And in the case of Gallagher, was arrested on September 11th while receiving medical care. Cam Pendleton has been held in San Diego's Naval Consolidated Brig Miramar with, like, sex offenders, rapists, pedophiles. You know, the lawmakers blasted during a Capitol Hill rally on Thursday. Gallagher has pleaded not guilty to war crimes stemming from a deployment to Iraq nearly 2 years ago. And, you know, we have this problem where, especially under the rules of engagement of Obama, we have a problem. That is that you have men and women in the battlefield that are being second guessed while they are having handcuffs put on them. And then if they make a wrong decision, this is during a time of war, then they are being held accountable and they're trying to prosecute these people. And it's not, you know, we told you about Christian Saucier. Okay, he had 6 pictures of the submarine he was so proud to work in, thankfully, and he served his time, had to leave his mother and his wife and his daughter and spend a year in jail. On the case of Clint Lawrence, you know, this is another travesty of justice because of these asinine rules of engagement during the Obama years. And they were put in place. And literally, Clint had just become the platoon leader about a week or a week and a half after members of that platoon were killed by jihadists, radical Islamists in Afghanistan that were riding motorcycles like they were with a car bomb. So all of a sudden, Clint is there with his platoon. He's leading that platoon. And he only really has a split second to decide, are these people in the motorcycle that are coming towards his platoon, just like what happened before I got here that killed these guys, are they jihadists? Is this another example or not? So he had to make a split second decision. He made the decision that he couldn't risk the lives of his men. And as a result, well, now he's facing, 30 years in jail? And the sad part is since this trial and all this took place, new evidence was discovered in this particular case where they actually, the people that died on the motorcycles, yeah, their fingerprints. In other words, DNA evidence is available on IEDs that were planted in and around the same area. You know, biometric details that they didn't have in place, evidence that exonerates Clint because he rightly figured out they were who they were. Which, by the way, you know, if we're going to send our brave men and women to go fight in a battlefield and we're going to put handcuffs on them, we're going to tie their hands behind their back and they have to make split second decisions that we're going to sit back in the comfort of our own protected homes, thanks to them, and then put them on trial and put them in jail for the rest of their life? No, that can't happen. Not in this country. Don Brown joins us. He's the author of The Travesty of Justice, The Shocking Prosecution of Lieutenant Clint Lawrence, also a JAG officer, and he's on Clint's legal team. And this book is exposing what is now overwhelming evidence to exonerate Clint Lawrence. He's not guilty of anything. And, you know, do you know if this has gotten into the hands of the president? Is the president aware of Clint Lawrence's case?
Sean, thanks for sticking with the fight here. And this is a marathon for justice, and you've been a warrior. You're right. Clint is guilty of nothing. I don't know whether this has gotten into the president's hands, but I know a guy named Sean Hannity could walk it over there to him when we get a copy of the book in your hands. But I can tell you this. Now is the time for action. Clint needs to be exonerated now. And as you mentioned, John Maher, who's been on your show a number of times, who is lead counsel for the defense team in this case, was kind enough to bring me on board as the fourth JAG officer fighting for Clint's freedom, along with Kevin Mikoshek and David Bolgiani. And this is not a close call. What we are hoping to do is to see President Trump sign what we call a disapproval of findings and sentencing to vacate the whole thing, not just a pardon. A pardon would be nice, but the problem, Sean, with a pardon is it implies guilt. He's guilty of nothing. You know, Colonel West said recently that trying to charge these guys for murder in a battlefield is about as stupid as writing speeding tickets at the Daytona 500. And I can tell you this, Clint's been rotting at Leavenworth for 6 years, and he's got, you know, he had a 20-year sentence that was commuted 1 year down to 19 years. He still has another 13 years to sit there because he put his neck on the line for me and you. And it's time to right this wrong. I can tell you this, these more recent travesties against Eddie Gallagher and against Matt Goldstein are really shooting a bad acid into the morale of the current U.S. military. Clinton's been gone for 6 years, but we got to clean this up. President Trump's doing a great job trying to secure the border, but you got to secure the military. You got to have good order and discipline. You can't have these despicable political prosecutions, but Clinton needs to be freed now, not tomorrow, not 30 minutes from now, not a year from now, but now. It's time for him to walk out free. And by the way, Sean, I was with Clint 5 times last year at Leavenworth, and when he's finally out, he's going to be one of the greatest interviews that you ever. The guy is unbelievable. He's a patriot. He still loves his country. Despite the fact that he's been shafted, he still loves the Army, and he still wants to serve. And President Trump, if you're listening, disapprove those sentences and findings now. Restore Clint to active duty and give him back pay for the time that he's been rotting away at Leavenworth without pay, and then promote him commensurate with his time and service. It's time to right this wrong and see justice.
Let me ask you one question, which I never understood in this case. I understand the insanity of the Obama rules of engagement.
Right.
I think I described accurately the circumstances under which he had to make a split-second decision,
yep.
Right?
Okay.
And I explained, I think, pretty accurately that the rules of engagement were in place, and,
yep,
you know, the biometrics evidence that exonerates Clint literally has not been used as it relates to forensics as with the two jihadists that were approaching this platoon. What I don't understand is why that evidence didn't be brought before a military jury. They know that Clint's man had shot and killed the enemy, and the prosecution portrayed the motorcycle riders as if they were on a Sunday stroll in the park. And, you know, they were, these were just poor, innocent farmers. We now can prove beyond any doubt that that's not true. But what I don't understand is that Clint's men were ordered to testify against him or face murder charges themselves. Now, we now know, just following this whole special prosecutor issue, that it is a very common practice that if you sing or compose, you will get a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Right.
Okay. But the problem here is how many of these of his own guys did that to save their own ass from going to jail themselves for the rest of their lives?
Sean, you ask a very good question. This evidence, this biometrics evidence, a lot of most Americans don't know that one of the things that General Petraeus put into place around 2007 is the U.S. Army was taking fingerprints of just about everybody in Afghanistan. The original, and so we're doing that because, as you set it up earlier, these IEDs would go off. More Americans were killed by bombs in the ground than by bullets in the Afghan war. You know, this patrol on the morning that these yahoos were shot by Clint's men had to march in a straight single file line, 100 or so yards long, because you step to the left, to the right, boom, you blow up. So we were collecting evidence, and so Lieutenant Colonel Maher, John Maher, lead counsel, did not take the case until afterwards. John had some experience working in Afghanistan with this biometrics prosecution program, so he knew about it. But to go back to the original trial, the defense team at the original trial, which is a different group of lawyers, did request discovery asking for biometrics data, and it was not delivered. It was hidden from them. The military judge referred to it as going deep into the abyss. This was exonerating evidence hid deliberately from the military jury. Why? Because they wanted to deliver Clint's head on a silver platter to appease the Karzai administration, Hamid Karzai. Now, you've nailed it on the head with these rules of engagement. It really dates back to the summer of 2011, but there was the 96 days between Operation Neptune Spear taking out bin Laden and the shootdown of Extortion 17, August 6, 2011. Things change. Obama comes out on June 24th, announces we're pulling out of Afghanistan. He gives a definite pullout date, and Karzai goes ballistic because he knows he can't survive without American military power. So he starts negotiating with the Taliban. And then, Sean, we start negotiating with the Taliban. The Taliban is complaining about we're killing them. And they're complaining about it under the guise of civilian casualties, which is a bunch of BS. So the Obama administration reacts by tightening the rules. One of the rules in place is basically you got to play battlefield lawyer. You can't shoot unless you're shot at first. But if you're going to shoot without being shot at first, you got to play battlefield lawyer, which required these guys to go through a two-part analysis. Number one, is there a hostile intent? Number two, is there a hostile act? Well, hell, by the time a motorcycle comes up on you and pulls the ripcord, you're dead. And that's the situation Clint had to face. It was a no-win situation. And I tell you this, Sean, I spent a lot of time with him over the last year. John Maher are going out to see him again this coming weekend. But the young man said that, hey, if I had to make a decision. The decision was either to protect my men or take the risk they were going to get killed. This platoon would have gone home in 30 days, and Clint was determined that none of them would go home in body bags. And so in a split-second decision, as you said, he said, pull the trigger. And Clint told me that had he been wrong and not pulled the trigger and not ordered his men, actually Clint never even saw the motorcycle. He was far enough away from it, he didn't see it. But if his men had not fired and he'd been wrong, they'd been taken out, he told me he would have lived in a prison that was far worse than the prison that they put him in, because that prison, knowing that his men's blood were on his hands, would have haunted him for the rest of his life. We've got to put an end to it. This is an opportunity for the president to go in and clean up some of this crap going on in the military, where we have political correctness at the top echelons of the military still bleeding over from the last administration, where bureaucrats put the lives of the enemy ahead of the lives of Americans. We've got to stop it, and we have to improve good order and discipline and morale in the military. And President Trump can do that by freeing Clint now and wiping away this crap with Eddie Gallagher and Matt Goldstein, and do it now, Mr. President.
I don't think I can say it any better. Will you please send my best wishes, my thoughts, my prayers to Clint Lawrence? And I'll do my very best. People think I have a lot more contact than I actually do, but I'll make sure that if I get an interview at any point in the near future with the president, or even at a later point, I will get that book to his staff and in his hands.
Sean, we're trying to get a million copies out. We set it down at $2.99 on the ebook. We want a million Americans to read it and call the White House to free Clinton now.
All right, I appreciate it. I agree completely. And by the way, the ebook price of this is only $2.99. That's it. I mean, you need to get this. We'll put it up on our website, Hannity.com. All right, quick break. Thank you so much, Don Brown, for being with us. 800-941-SEAN is our number. All right, Hannity, tonight, 9 Eastern. We have a great show tonight. You don't want to miss it. Dan Bongino versus Geraldo. That's always fun. Also, Lindsey Graham stops by. Mark Morgan, who's he? Obama's border guy who says, yeah, it's a real crisis. It's a real problem. Yeah, we're going to talk a little Alec Baldwin tonight and much, much more. 9 Eastern, Hannity on Fox. News you will not get from the hate Trump media mob on the Fox News channel. And yes, we're holding them accountable. See you tonight at 9, back here tomorrow.